Hello, everyone, and welcome to this webinar today. I'm Francis Seeley from Enfield Climate Action Forum, and this is one of the many webinars we do on a number of different topics. And today we've got Rudy Page with us. And Rudy is someone who is very concerned in health and well-being. And he's particularly concerned with the fact that very often communities and statutory authorities don't always reach the most disadvantaged communities. And he's very concerned about setting up a framework to make that happen. So we're going to talk to him about that today. And also in the context of public health and climate change, because climate change will make many of the problems that we have now even worse in the future, in fact, in the very near future. So Rudy, thank you for joining us today. If we could start, if you could tell us very briefly, I know you could go on for a long time, but very briefly, you know, something about your background.
Right. I'm a child of the Windrush generation. My mother came from Montserrat, father Jamaica, but I was born here in London. So by profession, I'm a management consultant. So I specialize in policy implementation. There's four kind of key practice areas I'm involved in. So community services, which I know we're going to talk about today. Healthcare systems, the diaspora affairs, and also international trade in terms of business support.
And what's made you interested, I mean, in health and well-being? Because that is your sort of passion. That's what you concentrated on. What led you to that?
I think growing up in the 60s and 70s in the UK, so I was very starkly aware of the inequalities, particularly with different particular population groups and, of course, the Caribbean community. And then, you know, I've worked in the private sector, public sector, you know, faith sectors. And I could see that I worked out that one of the best areas to make an impact on addressing some of the inequalities is through the healthcare system. And of course, like many people, I've got family experiences, good and otherwise, as it relates to health and well-being, public health.
And you came to the conclusion when you looked at this, didn't you, that a lot of those services weren't reaching the people who really needed it in disadvantaged communities. And that was another big motivation for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. In one sense, I was fortunate because I was in the private sector with a marketing background before I moved into management consulting. And the area of consulting that I got involved in was regeneration. And that was really in Northwest London before I came into work in North London. So there you really get to understand what some of the challenges are for different population groups and for the community as a whole. And with the kind of the resources and the right approach, you can really improve people's lives.
But you often believed, didn't you, that there wasn't the right approach, that the delivery systems were not fit for purpose, they weren't adequate. I mean, what did you mean by those delivery systems not being adequate?
Right, interesting. It's something, if I take North London in particular, Haringey, Enfield and Barnet, where I had a lot of experience in this, it was actually an admission by the local economic development agency itself. So in those days, we had the North London Training Enterprise Council and Business Link London North, a combined agency. And it was them who really came to the conclusion that something needed to be done about the delivery system. And that's where I was brought in to work on that. But there was a stark difference in terms of the ways of engagement, but most importantly, the willingness for communities to get involved, because collaboration, trust and cooperation is important if you're going to get the communities to get involved. And then, of course, you've got to also have the challenge from the system itself, the people who work in the system, willing to engage with communities who they may not know much about. And so that's also really important. So It's about having the technical expertise as well as that cultural understanding. And that's quite a lot of times that can be missing from delivery, from the delivery mechanisms at that local level.
So to address that problem, you started up Synergy, didn't you? Tell us how that how that works.
Well, Synergy was the implementation program on behalf of, at the time, what was called the North London Cultural Diversity Forum. So again, this is where you had the public private sectors getting together and saying that we need to do something with the resources that we have to ensure there was a better representation from the different communities. But as you know, having said that, but how do you do it? You know, it's the implementation that, that counts. So the Synergy project approach was at the time is a stakeholder approach. So these days we say all voices must be heard, but back then it was about stakeholders. So who were all the stakeholders, and were they around the table, and did we have their perspective? But not only that, it was important that we use different means of communication in order to get those perspectives. Because sometimes what happens institutionally, people will say, well, we've got an engagement program, we went out and spoke to people, and there's no understanding that there could be people missing, or the way they're putting it across is not in terms of people's understanding. So the term we used to use those days was the means of communication may be different, but the needs are the same. So it's how you communicate with various population groups.
So what were local authorities and others doing that was wrong, that they didn't communicate in the way that you thought they could? Because I know that you're very concerned with setting up community consultations and dialogue. So how did you feed that in? How did you make that change? What did you say that they had to do different?
It really was about all stakeholders being around the table and being willing to share the information as well. And when you, and the data was there in terms of who was active in the community or who was not involved. So it was to look at, well, how do we get around the table? Who are the local decision makers? What do they think? What is their understanding about the topics that are now being discussed? And in a sense, it was, the important thing is bringing people around the table and building trust and relationships. I think that's what's missing. And sometimes you have to go beyond those who are normally seen and look for others as well. That was important. So widen the net, widen the people that you're willing to engage in the different communities.
Well, it's interesting you say about going beyond, because I know you say in a lot of your literature, you're there to make connections work.
Yeah.
And connections don't always work just by bringing them together, do they? Yeah. I mean, I always say that in networking, network is two syllables. It's net and work. You've got to create the net, and then you've got to work it. Some people believe that all you have to do is set up the net, go back, sit on your sofa, and it will go like magic. And it doesn't. There is a lot of work, isn't there, in making connections work for the benefit of people.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And in fact, in my line of work, we always say it's 10% is the what and 90% is the how. Most people do it around the other way. So, you know, and the work and the building relationships, the trust and constant communication is really important to connect those dots.
Yeah, I used to be a BBC producer. And I used to say, you know, 20% is creativity, 80% is plumbing. And people very often don't understand that there's a lot of humdrum in making things work. And people get excited by ideas, don't they?
Yes.
But it's the work that goes with it that they find difficult. You also, are interested, because we talked about this, haven't we, on climate change.
Yeah.
And lots of the problems that we face now in the areas of health and well-being are serious enough, and they affect or they badly affect disadvantaged communities. Mm-hmm. But climate change is coming along, and that's going to make a lot of those problems a lot worse in the very near future, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what's going to be important for us now, as we do focus on this, is that it's where's the point of access that will help people to actually understand. So yes, you can raise awareness. And I think one of the key points of access in particular has been around air pollution as well. And being able to make that link with that broader social determinants when it comes to, you know, people's health. And I think we do need to start to incorporate that when we're talking about community wellness and how it impacts the mental well-being of communities. We've kind of got to break down some barriers. It also means obviously a change of language so that people can actually understand what we mean and then make the connections for themselves. So I do think now it's something that we will focus on quite strongly. And I look forward to the collaboration with yourselves on this.
Well, that's great because, you know, it's interesting. When I spoke to you before, you said that it's quite amazing, really, that people are concerned about health and well-being and public health, but they haven't given enough thought to how climate change will impact on that. Is that something you feel?
No, absolutely. And what I would say, again, if we look at the provider of services, so it's we're back to that means of communication. So the means of communication may be different. So different means of communication need to be considered by those who are the providers of services because the needs are the same. So the needs are the same, i.e. clean air, safety, and a good environment. And that's what we all need. But of course, there's certain groups depending on where you live. And I've been on the different housing estates, as I say, working in regeneration. And you know, I've been to the greener pastures as well in the same areas. And there's a big difference in terms of air pollution depending on where you live and those things. So again, but how do we get people involved? What is the access point? What is the pathway? And what can they do? What can they do to improve their situation as well?
Well, I mean, you might say that statutory authorities haven't given enough attention to climate change and public health, but mm-hmm. in the community as well. I mean, I notice that when you ask people their priorities, climate change comes down about number eight, and jobs and health and so on are at the top. Mm-hmm. And that makes a great opportunity, really, because if you look at the impact of climate change on health, you sort of raise the way people look at climate change as well. And air pollution is a big issue, isn't it? Because it affects people's health badly. And when you have increased heat because of climate change, air pollution can go up. So, I mean, air pollution is one way that we can approach climate change, understanding and awareness.
No, absolutely. And I think the key thing from a provider, the providers of services would be to demonstrate very clearly that what they've set out in terms of public's understanding does involve the public as well. Because also in these situations, you have to get an understanding from the public themselves of how they also see some of the challenges as it relates to their health and their pollution and their environment and what they actually do about it. Particularly if you live in very, you know, built up areas where there may be not a lot of choice, but then some people may say, well, I go to the countryside every weekend in order to get some fresh air. We don't know until we have these dialogues with people and also find out from themselves.
Well, going to the countryside to get fresh air is one thing, but having green space where you live is also important as well, isn't it? And in disadvantaged communities, there's a lack of green space sometimes, and that helps to create well-being, but it also helps to, you know, create better air, a cooler environment in urban buildings, in urban settings, where heat is likely to be more excessive than it is outside. And we don't have those green spaces, do we?
So again, we're talking about access again, aren't we? We're back to this access, but certain neighbourhoods and local communities don't have access. Well, so how can we improve access? And that's important. So hopefully it's something that we would hear more from our public health teams, that whilst they're talking about the reduction in some of the underlying conditions that have now become even more important because of where we are now, are they relating that and aligning that with access to green spaces as well?
I mean, lifestyles is also important because, you know, if you have an unhealthy lifestyle in terms of climate change, when the environment gets a lot more aggressive, then that doesn't help. And we've just seen the government delay, you know, stopping advertising on, you know, food that creates obesity. But looking at lifestyles and trying to get people or encourage people to have healthier lifestyles is also an important issue, isn't it?
No, absolutely. And if, again, I would go back to the program of activities that go on in communities, and if the resources are provided by the existing agencies, then communities, the private, the public sector, you know, faith communities, they're all willing to get involved and be part of the solution, as it, because it's, you know, it's good for everybody in terms of the overall well-being. And maybe there are some good initiatives already, and they just need to be, you know, better highlighted and shared.
You know that we have a project, and you mentioned it earlier, about public health and climate change. And the plan is to do a number of things, video stories, but to set up a number, maybe two or three community panels in September and October, probably in the east of the borough, to look at some of these issues. Now, do you think the sort of community consultations that you are very keen on is something that we could link into those community panels? And how do you think we could do that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we these days we use the term dialogues, even though we are consulting. But I think it's important, going back to the point I made earlier on about all voices must be heard. So again, it's being able to give everyone the opportunity to have their say. But also at the same time, that those with the expertise must also have cultural understanding about communities that they're dealing with as well, because that's always important. So the term that's really come to us over these last few months has been, we call trusted messengers. You know, I think that's it. That's definitely been important to for people who can communicate well with those communities. They have some understanding, they appreciate what it's like to be in those particular sort of environments, and they're willing to share and listen.
That's interesting, because Eric, the Enfield Racial Equality Council, very keen on working with us on this, and they have the idea of developing community champions. Yeah. And trusted messengers is a sort of community champion who actually relates to their community, is it?
Well, it's partly, and the community champion is really important. And by and large, the trusted messenger, they tend to be in the system. They have the technical expertise. But as I said, they also have the cultural understanding and are able to gain the trust and build relationships with the people who they're seeking to influence. And of course, what we've been through over this last couple of years, that's been really important. So the community champions are really important, are essential part of that mix.
And what do you think a community champion should do?
Well, I see them very much in terms of the peer-to-peer influence, and that's really important. And again, being able to have that confidence building approach in familiar settings, so you can have your community champions in your church, your faith communities. You know, you can have them in your business communities, have them especially among young people as well. And those who are mentoring, you know, who are mentors and the communities look up to. So, and of course, these community champions, they are important, because also just their presence can sometimes make a big difference when you're in different groupings and different settings.
So if you were an organisation like we are, Enfield Climate Action Forum, and we're working with others as well, Enfield Voluntary Action and the Racial Equality Council, I mean, how would you go about finding those community champions? How would you do it in a way that's inclusive and that they feel that they're totally a part of what we're doing? They're not being used, they're a part of what we're doing.
And those individuals do exist, and the fact that you're even asking about them, so you're willing to find out from people who are the term we use would be, you know, who does have the proven track record of achievement, you know, who has been involved before, who do people respect, and they're there. They're always there in communities if we want to look for them. So it's not difficult. So I think. There are some, and involvement is important because giving communities a way to get involved improves representation. I know it sounds quite straightforward, but that has been a big challenge, you know, over the last couple of years. There's been an improvement, but I think with this topic now, improving the way the access to involvement or reducing the barriers to involvement from the different groups that you're focusing on, I think is important.
So, I mean, obviously, when we do the community panels, we'll be talking about some of the issues we talked about now, air pollution, lack of green spaces, and so on. But one of the major reasons for having it is to listen, to find out what people there feel about their problems and how they feel climate change may impact on it. What's the best way, in your view and from your experience, of creating an environment where listening can take place?
Yeah, and I go back to the all voices must be heard, and being in those familiar settings as well, and being sensitive to the different groups that exist in our population. So, you know, there can be, I think if you're willing to deliver these dialogues or consultations within the settings that are most comfortable to the different groups, I think it'll be more effective. As opposed to saying, everybody has to come to this place at this time. There's some of that, of course, but part of it must be, and that's why your community champions are important, because it can be just as effective for you to be invited to other people's meetings as opposed to you calling the meeting and asking them to come to your meeting.
Okay, so if we wanted to, try to go out to people to make it as inclusive as we can, you know, how would you recommend we do that? How do we reach all the communities that are essential for us to make the project successful?
I guess place is important. So given you've already identified a particular area, so it would be to, we've got the community representative organisations in terms of churches, business people and other grouping, sports grouping. You've got lots of different health initiatives for the various conditions. So it's not difficult to find those people. They're around. They're quite active.
And how easy is it to move from finding them to getting them involved?
The invitation is important, of course, there's a level of what's in it for me. But of course, people do understand the greater good as well, because if they didn't, they wouldn't be doing what they're doing. So again, we're back to the communication again, aren't we? You know, and you've been very clear beyond just saying it's about, you know, climate change. You touched on it earlier on. It's about some of the other things. So that's why we talk about, you know, community wellness now. So we go and we think about some of the other areas that are important to people's lives, particularly, you know, when it comes to mental well-being as well.
So, I mean, the way of actually communicating is not just to talk in general terms about climate change, but to talk about those issues, the air pollution, the lack of green spaces, the things that affect people's everyday lives. Yeah. Is that what you would recommend?
Because again, we're talking about those broader determinants, which I think will connect to people more. When you start to talk about those broader determinants as it relates to their health and the issues that they're facing on the day to day.
And then if you've done that and you've done it successfully, how do you engage the statutory authorities? I mean, we've got the health authorities involved because they are doing it with us. But then how do you involve the local authorities and so on? Local authorities like to think that they're the ones who are the prime movers. But this is about a collaborative network of equal partnerships, isn't it? So how do you get all the players, the old-fashioned word, stakeholders involved, that they realise it's an equal partnership and they can get more by working together on that basis?
That is a good point. And you have to take what we call a separate and complementary approach to that. So, yes, the people in the system. And it starts with, at least, as I mentioned, going back to previously, that there's recognition within the system that they do want to improve the level of involvement, representation, and the improvement of services to those groups that are underserved. And they do know who they are because the data's there. So if they're willing to what we call be held to account by the data that they have, and you have a trusted partnership arrangement with them. I mean, they are the anchor institutions in our local community. So I'm assuming or hoping that there is people have gone beyond the indifference that keeps some of the inequalities in place. So that would be the challenge that you have. Yeah. So I think you would need to sort that out before you go to the community and be confident that you've got that trusted partnership relationship.
It's building that trusted partnership relationship, and that's very difficult because community groups very often are at loggerheads with statutory authorities and especially local authorities. And that's not easy to overcome, is it? Because they want someone to work with them that's not going to be critical, but community groups want to be critical as well as want to be positive. So how do you build that trusting relationship and still maintain your autonomy, your freedom to be critical as well?
And North London did that very well with the Cultural Diversity Forum. So again, it's being able to have a forum where there's some agreement of the key agenda items that can be worked through, that is in the interest of all stakeholders. There's something there for everyone.
Okay, well, we've sort of come to the end of our 30 minutes, and that's been really interesting. And I mean, for me, educational as well, about how we can move forward. But just to ask you finally, I mean, if anybody wanted to find out more about what you do, what you've done, the processes you've used, the way you've worked with communities and statutory authorities, how would they do it? Where would they go?
Right. If they go to makingconnectionswork.com, and in particular, there's a Overcoming Unseen Barriers, OUB. So Overcoming Unseen Barriers, if you can put that in the search box, and it will show a lot of documents, many years of various ways that we've overcome the unseen barriers.
Okay, well, we'll look at that and we'll pass that information to other people we're working with as well. Anyhow, Rudy, I mean, thank you for doing that and for giving us some of the ideas that you've worked on and some of the solutions you've found and some of the difficulties as well that we all will face because it's never an easy ride, whatever you do. That has been very helpful. And I mean, we all look forward to working with you in the future, and especially on this towards consultation with communities in Enfield and with the community panels. And I think, you know, you can help us a great deal in that. So, you know, thank you for what you've done. Thank you for the interview and your knowledge. And we'll end this interview now.
Thank you. Bye.